I felt this wave of relief just cast over me, like, oh my God, I'm not terrible at life. There's nothing wrong with me. My brain works differently than everyone has expecting me to function. My brain just works differently. And I just raised a child on my own, but like for the last 10, 11 years with this issue. And I like, look how far I've come. Look at what I did. I like the sense of like I spent my whole life flogging myself for all the things that I just couldn't keep on top of and couldn't keep organized and couldn't. And I've been a really fun, wild, creative person, but it was like I was always so hard on myself. And in that moment, realizing how much I had accomplished as a mother, as a working woman, just as a human and an adult, I felt so validated and relieved.
Welcome to Successful with ADHD. I'm Brooke Schnittman. Let's get started. Bethany Joy Lenz, she's an American actress, singer-songwriter, and filmmaker. And she's very well known for her portrayal of Haley James Scott on the WB, which is the CW television drama One Tree Hill. Welcome, Joy. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. And Bethany is just not any actress, songwriter, author. She, in fact, is one of us. She is a fellow ADHDer.
You. I just found out.
She's part of the tribe.
Oh, God.
I know you just found out about a year ago. Tell us about what got you to finally consider that you might have an ADHD diagnosis.
It never occurred to me. I always thought ADHD was the same thing I thought it was in high school, which is some guy is really hyperactive and has to be on Ritalin because he can't stop moving around and talking really fast, and he's super annoying in class, and that's just the only understanding I ever had of ADHD. And I mean, thank God for Instagram. I think something just came up in my feed, and I read these, like, it was probably some late night scrolling. I read some like descriptive elements of someone with ADHD, and I kind of went, huh, that's funny. And then I clicked on it and just started going down a rabbit hole. I was like, that's funny. I wonder if I have that, like a little bit, like maybe I have a little of that. And then I continued down the rabbit hole for the next few weeks until the point where I was 100% sure that this is exactly what I deal with. And then I started going into real like medical research and looking into, I mean, it was a hyper focus mode of
Whoa, my new brain that I didn't know about.
I was on an airplane and I started seeing, I think I just saw one of those, like one of those diagrams that you put up. And it was all the ways that our behavior interacts and diverges from one thing to another. And I just thought about, I felt this wave of relief just cast over me, like, oh my God, I'm not terrible at life. There's nothing wrong with me. My brain works differently than everyone has expecting me to function. My brain just works differently. And I just raised a child on my own, but like for the last 10, 11 years with this issue. And I like, look how far I've come. Look at what I did. I like the sense of like I spent my whole life flogging myself for all the things that I just couldn't keep on top of and couldn't keep organized and couldn't. And I've been a really fun, wild, creative person, but it was like I was always so hard on myself. And in that moment, realizing how much I had accomplished as a mother, as a working woman, just as a human and an adult, I felt so validated and relieved. And that was really the first month of realizing that this is what I had.
Yeah. So you felt validated and relieved. Do you have an official ADHD diagnosis?
I do. It took me about 6 months before I
Okay.
went to go get the diagnosis because I didn't want to I don't like medication. I don't like having things in my body if I don't have to. And so I realized that I had this, but I wanted to put into practice all of the tools and suggestions for how to try and manage this on my own. And so I did that for about 6 months. And then I realized it was not enough. I just was not capable. My brain, the chemistry is off and I need help with it. And so, yes, then I called a doctor. I went in, I did my two or three sessions, got my diagnosis and got my prescription and started just experimenting with that. But it was amazing. I mean, it was like shockingly amazing, the difference at how much more like myself I felt, how much more settled, dropped into my body, focused, capable. It made a huge difference. And so being able to continue to talk with my doctor through that over the last year has made a huge difference in my ability to actually finish a lot of tasks that I start and not feel so overwhelmed.
Yeah. I mean, look at all that you've accomplished in your life. And especially now you have your newspaper that is launched. You have the Strawberries new single that you just dropped on August 18th. Yeah. You have a podcast, Drama Queens. You have a lot. You have an 11-year-old child, you said?
Yeah, 12-year-old.
12-year-old? So you've been moving and shaking.
It's a lot. It is. It's one of the busiest seasons of my life ever. I think knowing this about myself and having tools to navigate has made all the difference, because when I start to feel overwhelmed or when I bump up against certain walls, I don't beat myself up. I'm not like, why can everybody else do this and I can't? It just moves into a different zone of like, let me focus on what I'm really good at. Here's how I stay in my lane. And now I don't feel guilty about bringing in other people to be good at doing things that I am not good at doing. You know,
I love it. So you delegate, you stay focused on your strengths, which is so important. You don't beat yourself up about the things that are your weaknesses and you're more aware of that. It all starts with that awareness. And I love how you really immerse yourself in the tools and the strategies and the community of people with ADHD, because that is where you're going to learn the lifelong lessons and feel like you are a part of this group. And then the medication very often is something that comes after, and it's a triage effect. Now, I understand that a lot of people don't like or are nervous to take it because they don't want that in their body. But the effects, it helps 80 to 90% of people who take stimulants. And it actually, without medication, very often, the studies show that you can live 13 years less than with medication because of all the risky behavior, the impulsivity, the stress. So I'm not pushing medication on anyone. But I too am on medication. I did the behavioral piece first because you have to understand how to work with your brain. And then the medication will help you fire more regularly.
I agree. And I also don't take it every day. I try and space it out because there's addiction in my family. I want to be careful about that too. So I just am like, it's something that I have on me all the time. If I'm on a working day and I know I need to get things done and I need to be really dropped in, or if it's a high stress day or whatever, I will take it. And there's plenty of days when I'm like, I'm going to work out, I'm going to get my endorphins, and I'm going to navigate through today. But now that I know not to beat myself up, I'm so much more better off. I'm so much more settled. And I have to say, it's really transformed my friendships as well. And I don't know if you found this, but how old were you when you got diagnosed?
35.
Okay. 4 years so ago. Later in life, just like me. I don't know if you found this as well, but my friendships completely transformed in terms of my ability to be, again, easier on myself for, you know, I forget birthdays. And, you know, that's funny. What was one of the things I read? It's like, it's not that I forgot your birthday. It's like, I have no idea what day it is.
Exactly.
Yeah, Yeah, but plus I'm also dyscalculic, or I have dyscalculia, which is dyslexia with numbers, mm-hmm. and so then they get inverted. But anyway, it's things like that where I've come to be able to just go, oh yeah, it's just my brain. I'm sorry. I know my lane of where I can be a really good friend. And there are places in my friendships where I just have to be like, I'm sorry. I'm probably always going to be 5 to 10 minutes late. I really try not to be. For some reason, professionally, I can manage it. And with friendships, it's harder there are so many little spaces that are weird gaps in my brain, and I'm working on all of them, but it's not all going to change overnight. So being able to accept myself and being able to communicate with my friends so that they're not sitting there guessing, like, what is her deal? And the people who I have made friends with who are also neurodivergent, whereas before I might have been like, what is this person's problem? Now I'm like, oh, they have the exact same brain as me. And I have so much more space in my life to give them grace because I understand.
So it almost seems like you're a lot more fulfilled in the other areas of your life where perhaps you used to worry or people would shame you and you felt bad, but now you can be an advocate for yourself and the way that your brain works. And like, I'm going to try, but take it or leave it, this is who I am.
Yeah, I'm getting better at that. I'm not an expert, and there are still environments. The last movie I worked on, I had a really horrible experience with our producers. There were some major misunderstandings that were due to my neurodivergence and their complete lack of information about neurodivergence. And it took me a while to figure out that that's what was happening, because it felt at first like a character attack, just a total onslaught of like, why do these people hate me? What the hell is going on? This is so strange. And then it took a few days before I really was like, oh, if you don't understand the way that this brain works, it's so easy to interpret certain behavior as something completely opposite from what it actually is. And so that takes time, because then it's like, yeah, you want to stand up for yourself and have that space like you're talking about, but you also want to give people grace and give them space for just not. Most people, unless you have this or have this in your family, you just don't really understand it or don't know what it is. So, you know, you got to just give people grace, and hopefully they'll be willing to listen to you when you can share with them, hey, let me educate you on something you probably don't know.
I love that. So even if you have ADHD, two ADHD brains don't always look alike. I think someone mentioned that there's about like 6,000 different ways that your symptoms manifest when you combine all of it.
Whoa.
So with that being said, I have ADHD, you have ADHD, my husband has ADHD, my two stepsons have ADHD. We all look different. Wow. Internally, of course.
Do you find that it's easier? It's still easy to recognize, though? Like, even though the symptoms are different, do you still feel like you're able to, even when you meet a stranger, you're kind of like, I know what that is.
Yeah. So there are certain indicators, of course. So like you had started out saying you thought it was the boy in high school who couldn't sit still and, you know, didn't raise his hand and would call out. Yeah. That's a big indicator. Another thing is my older stepson, he has the inattentive type. So I would talk to him and he would zone out and he would like start creating screenplays in his head. So, right? So I was like, come on, come back. 100%. And every unless teacher. We mentioned, yeah. And so unless I mentioned his name first to get his attention, he would not hear what we had to say because he was in tunnel. So those are two big things. They both have extreme ADHD, but they manifest differently. So yeah, there are some indicators, but yes, there's so many other coexisting conditions that come with ADHD. It's almost always co-occurring with something. So you said you had dyscalculia. That is a very common co-occurrence. Dyslexia, autism, OCD, bipolar, ODD, the list can go on and on. So there's that other thing that you have to work on as well. There's also trauma, PTSD, anxiety, depression. So
yeah, all of it.
All of it, all of it. So rewinds back in the day, you've done a lot of different shows, movies, what have you. How did you remember your lines? Because ADHDers struggle with executive dysfunction and working memory is one of those things. And I work with a lot of actors and they also struggle with memorizing their lines. What was your trick?
I have never had a problem remembering my lines. And that's even from a young, I mean, I remember when I was 11, 10 or 11, I played Scout in To Kill a Mockingbird in a local production, like a regional production in Texas. And the first rehearsal, I showed up and I had the entire play memorized. I knew everyone else's lines and mine.
Wow.
And for me, that's a hyper focus because I'm so intensely interested in it. But also as an actor, the whole point is that it's in your body and you're listening. And so if it's good writing, you really should just be able to listen. And if you're completely present and dropped in and in the moment, your natural response will be something close to what's on the page. And then my brain just kind of ties it together. So the words may not come out from me exactly the same way as they might come out from my character, but they're similar enough that I have a photographic memory as well. So I can go back and remember where on the page it is and sort of, I can't read the lines exactly in my brain, but it's close enough that I will remember.
No, that's a really good explanation because you are present and you love acting. And I just read in the National Geographic that so much, and I knew this, but so much of memory has to do with emotion. So If you are emotional when memorizing the script, you're going to remember it or have an easier time remembering it.
But if I read anything else, I would love to be someone who is super well-spoken about data and the things that I read about social, political discourse, just information that I consume from various sources and things that help me formulate a lot of my opinions about life and activity that's happening around me in the world. I'm always open to being changed, but once I have established a foundation for something, the information is gone. Like there is no way that I can actually recite back. I could tell you where on the page it was that I read it. I could say it's like the top left corner of that book that's on the shelf, on the bottom shelf to the right. But there's no way I could tell you back what the numbers are or exactly what the quote was. I might not even really be able to give you a general sense of what I read. I could just say something, I read something once that made sense to me. And in the moment, I'm super interested and I will do additional research and I will kind of do everything I need to do to feel like, okay, I can formulate an educated opinion about this. And then I have the opinion and then I move forward in the world with the opinion, but the information is gone to me. And it's so irritating.
Well, two things. A, you have dyscalculia. And B,
yes.
You said when you're acting, sometimes the words are not exact, but the emotion and what you say are close enough. But when you're talking about data, you have to be exact, right? If you're a researcher.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that you wouldn't remember that. Just like you said, you don't remember what day it is, right? It's not that you don't remember the birthday. You just don't, you're not like present to what the date on the calendar is. So
yeah.
I guess we all have our strengths and weaknesses when it comes to memory.
We do. I have a friend who's got ADHD, but she's amazing with data. Like she can tell you exactly what everything she'll read a whole book and then go tell you everything that's in the book and what page you can find it on. I wish.
Wow.
Yeah.
So 35% of individuals with ADHD are entrepreneurs. Not sure if you knew that, but we have this drive to be, we have this drive to be our own boss and make our own rules and just create. So you have a lot of different things going on. You have a book coming out. So tell me how you manage it all.
Sometimes I do well and sometimes I don't. I mean, I've historically never done well managing a lot of things, although a lot of my friends would tell you differently. I do have a lot of friends that tell me, I don't know how you do it all. You're amazing. How, and I'm like, I don't. What are you talking about? I'm failing constantly. And it doesn't, I guess, look that way to the outside, but I do feel constantly like I'm failing. And getting this diagnosis, being able to know how to use the medication to my advantage, and being able to learn how to feel okay about delegating has made a big difference in my productivity. So right now I would say timers make a huge difference. This is how I'm managing my motherhood, my music career, my newspaper that I'm the founder and editor of, and my podcasts. And of course, there's other things. Time to meditate, just getting outside, taking scheduling like an hour break or a 30-minute break to go outside and put my feet in the grass and just ground, and scheduling in a phone call, 20-minute phone call with a friend that I have to catch up with. I'm really learning to love and use my calendar a lot for just breaking the day up into small bits, and then really trying to be diligent about shutting everything down at 5:30, 6 o'clock, or 5, just depending on what the day needs, and make dinner, focus on my daughter, relax, and take a mental break for myself. Those are the things that help. If there's no perfect formula, and I wish there were, but.
Yeah, no, I love how you said that you actually schedule those 20 minutes to ground yourself. You know, it's not just about the work productivity that goes into your calendar. It's about the 20-minute phone call to your friends, the 20 minutes of going outside and being mindful, being like the non-negotiables.
Yeah, well, because I can't trust myself to remember to do those things. There's no way. Like, I have to put a reminder in my phone. I have to, and I've done it enough in my life. I still do it sometimes where I'll go, oh yeah, I got to remember. Okay, as soon as I get home, I have to call so and so, or as soon as I get home, I have to make sure to put the thing in the oven. But that's 10 minutes from now. And by the time I get home, it's gone. I'm completely somewhere else in my brain, and I won't remember to take the roast out of the freezer or the fish out of the freezer until it's dinner time, and then it's too late. And then now we're ordering from DoorDash. So there, I've got to set reminders with alarms, got to set timers. I just cannot trust myself. And that's okay. I don't feel guilty about it anymore.
That's awesome. Yeah. With ADHD, we have that now or not now mentality. And literally anything that's 10 minutes out is the not now. It's really hard to remember that when our brain is constantly in motion and we are either overstimulated or understimulated. So when you're going into the kitchen and you're forgetting about the frozen fish or whatever, it's because you see something along the way, right? That
Right.
triggers something and it reminds you to do this. And then that takes you down that weird squiggly.
Yeah,
Yeah.
always.
And you also recently had an article come out about you that
Yeah.
you spoke on your podcast about being in a cult for 10 years. And I'm not sure many people know about this. There's not really data or studies out there, but there are ADHD experts who talk about cult followings and ADHD.
Like, this is a common tie.
Yeah. So, like, high control groups preying on neurodivergent people. Because it's easy, but also on the flip side, we want a sense of belonging. We need black and white thinking. We don't like to live in the gray. So we need to have these, even though we don't like to follow rules, we need these rules to follow. It's the ADHD contradiction and people that can be our people. So very often, like I was part of before I became a coach, I was part of Landmark. I don't know if you've
Oh,
heard of it.
yeah.
It's a great coaching program. I love it. I learned a lot, but it's compared to a cult in many aspects. So it doesn't have to be religious to be a cult, right?
No, not at
But
all.
we all have certain things that we just go really strong into for long periods of time. So how did you get out of that? And I'm sure you talk about it more on your podcast, but what was that like for you?
Well, In terms of the of when I look back at my ADHD, I think you're right. I think the hyper focus and being able to assess a lot of different things at one time is and was really helpful and really useful for me. You know, once I hit the point where I realized I needed to go in a different direction, I think a total superpower of ADHD is to be able to calculate a lot of different variables at one time. This is something that I've seen work really well. I think it's one of the reasons why I'm a good actor, why I'm good at my job, because I'm not just feeling the emotion. I'm also, you have to be aware of where the camera is. You have to be aware of where the light is. You have to be aware of where the other actor's standing. You have to be aware of all those things and yet not look like you're focused on any of those things. You have to still stay completely emotionally present. So to hold an emotion, fully feel it, but also have your brain going in six or seven other different directions on the side, it's just so incredibly useful for people in a creative field. And when you're in some sort of a, you know, high demand group or abusive relationship or situation like that, and you're able to remove yourself just enough to see all the variables and see all the factors, it really helps to just help you navigate through it, because you know it's not just as simple as one or two things. Do you think that these groups know intentionally that they're preying on people who are neurodivergent, or is it just an easy access because of what you're saying about the need for belonging or acceptance or the black and white thinking?
I think it could be both. I don't have, you know, like enough information to answer that. But I also know that very often with ADHD, we could be like super quiet or we could be super loud. So it could be hard for us to build friendships. And when someone is essentially love bombing you, like a cult, right? They make you feel belong. Like there's essentially no work that you need to do. They just fully are showing you acceptance.
Yeah. Unconditional acceptance. It's, well, it seems like it is until the conditions really show up. But yeah.
Exactly. And that's also, like you mentioned, abusive relationships. We can jump into a relationship where someone is love bombing us and it's very exciting. And they're telling us all the things that they want to hear, we want to hear. And like, finally, we get that euphoria from someone loving us or from what we think loving us. And then the role switches for that person. And very often ADHDers do it to ADHDers. ADHDers can be the love bombers because their dopamine gets really high with new exciting relationships.
Yes, that was my next question. I wonder about the... there seems to be a fine line sometimes between behavior with true narcissistic behavior and then ADHD behavior, where you're not a narcissist because you do empathize and you have the capability to put yourself in other people's shoes and all those things. But the high of new things, newness.
Yes.
We're so used to it. That's just what, and especially for somebody who's like an actor, who we travel all the time, new sets, new people, new groups, new restaurants, new cities, new character, new clothes. It's all new, new, new. So to settle into something that's more long-term and serious, I could see how a lot of ADHDers are like constantly struggling with that.
Yeah, we get the need to be stimulated when we're understimulated. So jumping into something that's exciting brings us dopamine. And then from there, we just jump right in. And then after that, we're like overwhelmed and, you know, this is too much. I didn't see it coming. And then we back down and try to find new things. So I was talking to an ADHD couples specialist. Her name is Melissa Orlov. And she had mentioned that generally speaking, it takes ADHDers 2 years to really know their ADHD partner.
Wow.
So it's fascinating because you have this like phase. She said it's usually the first 6 months where like everything is great and they're actually a different person. And then they change into the person they really are. But it's not that they were trying to be someone different. It's just they were so excited about the newness of it that things look different.
Yeah, but that looks so much like narcissism. How do you know the difference?
Well, that's a good question. I'm not a narcissism specialist, but like you said, narcissists typically don't have empathy. And yeah. I just want to say that if you have autism, which 75% of people with autism have ADHD, not the other way around, you don't always understand people's emotions. So they might think you're narcissistic because you're not connecting to their emotions and you're not being empathetic, but you just don't understand it unless they flat out tell you.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. I think about that. There are moments I've definitely been accused in my life of being, I'm very blunt. Like I'm a Jersey girl. Like I'm really just, I'll tell you exactly what I'm thinking. I don't want to waste time. I don't want to waste your time or my time. But there've been a lot of times in my life when I've had people be like, ouch, like what the heck? Do you have to say it that bluntly? And I'm like, I'm not mad. I'm telling you exactly what's going on. But it can be hard for me to really think about unless I can, like you're saying, unless I can understand it and if somebody tells me in a way that makes sense why they're either behaving a certain way or feeling a certain way. Once I understand their feelings, I can drop right into it. And then it's like emotionally can be overwhelming, but it's just hard for me to understand it on the surface. I think because I emotionally detached from so many things personally, just in order to like get stuff done. And because I'm critical thinking all the time, my brain is always going rather than emoting. I'm like, huh, why did that happen? What should we, I don't know how I feel about that. I feel like, you know, my brain is like a little calculator instead of just feeling something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it can be hard to imagine how other people just are like feeling things without, when they don't make sense to me.
I totally hear you. It's so interesting. I'm doing so much of this and I don't know, things come in waves, right? So you start hearing the same thing over and over again, or you start like, I don't know, it's just someone's writing a script. But I've been doing EMDR.
Before this,
oh my gosh, it's wild. But I like just jumped into it. I'll give you some recommendations of people if you are interested. Before I started doing it, I am hyper aware and hypersensitive. So I'm like always on alert of what's going on, kind of like you. But I'm also emotional because I see everything. Like I feel other people's emotions to a flaw.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I would block myself from feeling emotions because of trauma from the past.
I think that's what it is, by the way. Like, I think that's because it's not that I don't feel. I could be standing next to somebody who's feeling something and I'll get like, when I go, nope, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I'm detaching, lovingly detached. I refuse to feel all of your emotions. But it's just a self-protective mechanism, probably because of trauma.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be. It could be. And now that I'm doing the EMDR, I'm starting to feel things again about how I feel. And it's so weird. Like everything is just so intense right now before it gets better. It's a good thing because I'm starting to feel again. But my whole point of going down this rabbit hole is that with ADHD, you can just kind of retract and not feel and just, you know, isolate, or you can feel everything and be out and about and get it all. So trauma is very often an indicator of this. And on top of that, when we're overstimulated, right, we're doing things, but when we're understimulated, we're looking for stimulation. So after we're overstimulated, we can burn out. And that's when we go into like our own little shell again. So sorry.
That's what I was going to say is do you find yourself vacillating between the two?
I do. I don't as much though, because I, like you, have a schedule. It's right on my desk. I actually, because I don't really move, which I should, but I don't, I take my phone, I put it all onto paper, and then I have all my events on paper. So I also put my to-dos and I schedule them in. So when I start to get that sensation in my body, like, oh gosh, I'm feeling overwhelmed or like I'm about to get there, I realize that I have to delegate, or what am I diving into right now that doesn't really need to be attended to? Why am I maybe producing less dopamine than usual? How is my sleep? Like the hierarchy of needs that I talked about in the article that I wrote for you, like all of those things. So I think that I got out of the cycle to the extremes as much as I used to, which is helpful.
That makes sense. Yeah.
But listen, there's times where I get there again. So we're all human.
Yeah, I do that too. I do.
But you know, when you have to be a performer, like you legitimately are a performer, how do you do that if you are overwhelmed?
Well, the acting is its own beast. It feels much more of a sacred space because you are manipulating your emotions for a living. And it's different, I think, than somebody who's probably working a desk job with ADHD, or someone who's creating their own art by themselves, or even entrepreneurship. I know you still have to have meetings with people and interact with people, but you can compartmentalize your emotions. When you're acting, you just have to use what you have in that moment toward the scene. So if you feel like crying and you have to do a comedy scene, I just turn the tears into laughter. You just sort of have to use, it's weird. It's almost like the emotions become their own. It's like a inside out. The emotions become their own little like entities, and you just move them around into the different spots. Like, I can't cry right now. I definitely can when I get home. Can't do it right now. Or if I'm feeling really extroverted and lots of energy and I have to do a calm, quiet scene, I just have to put that energy on a shelf and come back to it later and just drop into it. Because the work is so sacred to me. Like, storytelling is so sacred. If you can't, it's not a vanity project. Like, you're there to actually move people and give someone an experience that is authentic and pushes them deeper into themselves, and then deeper and then further out into the community based on the story that they've experienced with you. And so if I don't really show up and do my job to give that experience as the best way that I know how, then it's just all vanity. It's just sort of masturbatory, you know, it's like it's not actually doing any good. So I do find that space to be sacred, and I take where I put my emotions pretty seriously.
Got it. Thank you for sharing that. I could see an energy shift as you're talking about it too. So what's next for you? You have a lot in the frying pan.
Yeah. I think of my life as a stove with 25 burners. No, more like 6 burners, really. I have, my newspaper is called Modern Vintage News. modernvintagenews.com. It's a broadsheet lifestyle newspaper. You can see it's all behind me. It's artistic and creative and kind of perfect for a neurodivergent brain. Lots of bite-sized articles. And it's really just dealing with the critical thinking element that we have started to lose because we're all locked into our algorithms that our phone is feeding us. I just wanted to create a space that was fun for people to go spend time, not be overwhelmed by the content, or depressed, but dealing with things that are very real, like loneliness or suffering, but in character, thinking about your building your own character, but doing it in a way that is reflective of the past, looking forward to the future, and reminding you how to formulate your own opinion about things rather than just doing whatever the media or algorithms are telling you you're supposed to think or believe. So that's the mission behind the newspaper. Thanks. And then, yes, I'm also a songwriter and have been since I was very young, and it's a huge passion of mine. And so being in Nashville, that's been really fun. And I'm integrating myself here with the songwriter community and have been writing a lot. And I have a single that's out because I also sing. And so my country single is called Strawberries, and that came out a few weeks ago and got some, getting some airplay on country radio, which is fun.
Yay.
And yeah. And then a few other things, irons in the fire that will really announce when it's the right time.
Perfect. And hopefully we can share the links to Modern Vintage News and anything that comes out by the time this comes out in the show notes. And people can follow you on Instagram too.
Yep. It's just at MS Bethany Joy Lenz, Ms. Bethany Joy Lenz. And then the newspaper is at Modern Vintage News.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for being on Successful with ADHD today. I know that a lot of people listening are going to be inspired by your story. And if you're not already one of the 1.5 million followers that Bethany Joy Lenz has on Instagram, go follow her. She has really authentic, creative advocacy posts. I think that a lot of us in this community can resonate with what Bethany Joy Lenz shares.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so grateful and happy to be, really genuinely happy to be a part of this community. I think ADHDers are the coolest, man.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Successful with ADHD. I hope it helped you on your journey. And if you need any additional support for you or a loved one with ADHD, feel free to reach out to us at coachingwithbrooke.com and all social media platforms at Coaching with Brooke. And remember, it's Brooke with an E. Thanks again for listening. See you next time.